You're listening to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB. Farming news and stories from across the UK.
Hello, welcome to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB. I'm John Bates. Thank you for listening. Lamb from New Zealand is a long-established, well-accepted and nothing new to most shoppers. But since the UK exited the European community, we've witnessed a raft of commentary about new and potential trade deals highlighted in the media. Naturally enough, included is the Free Trade Agreement, or FTA for short, being negotiated, or as has been negotiated, with fellow Commonwealth member country New Zealand. The FTAs are regarded as an opportunity for some, but a few folks are worried that it may result in a flood of imports and the balance tipping the wrong way. But what do the all-important consumers think? As a shopper's hand glides over the products on the shelf, is the eye noticing the country of origin, as New Zealand? And does that have a positive or a negative effect, or no bearing at all on the decision to buy? Steve Evans is a consumer insight analyst with AHDB, and he'll be with us soon to share his insight on that very topic. But first, Sarah Baker joins us. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Sarah. Tell us a little bit about what you do for AHDB.
Thanks, John. Yes, I'm an agricultural economist and I head up the trade and policy team here at AHDB. So we look at all the changes in trade deals and FTAs and the changes in domestic policy here in England and in the devolved nations, and really sort of make sense for our levy payers what that means for their businesses.
Now, you and your colleagues at AHDB have invested quite a lot of time and energy in the last couple of years on producing a series of Horizon reports. And the latest Horizon report to hit the shelves is looking at the Free Trade Agreement with New Zealand. So tell us a little bit about what that covers.
Well, our levy payers have communicated really clearly that they want to understand the impact of future trade deals, particularly when a major agricultural exporter such as New Zealand is concerned. And we're in this unique position that we can provide the real unbiased evidence. We're not lobbyists. We don't have an angle on this. We can really delve into the detail and produce the evidence to our audience. So we'll look at the current trade patterns and predictions, sort of where is lamb, where is beef, where is dairy being traded at the moment, where is the demand, where is the main supply globally. And then we'll look at how it is produced both in New Zealand and the UK, the similarities and differences. We'll look at the policy framework in each of those countries. We'll look at the costs of production, the standards, and then we'll sort of model the impact. But the all important aspect that we want to look at today, as you so rightly said in your introduction, John, is how do consumers perceive that New Zealand product compared with our domestically produced sheep, meat, beef and dairy produce. So we have Steve here as the consumer insight expert to offer us more in-depth analysis in that area.
Well, Sarah, that's a great introduction, and I'll take the cue from you. Let's go straight to Steve. Hi, Steve. Thanks very much for coming on the podcast. So at the introduction, I sort of talked about the consumer's hand sort of floating above the product on the shelf and whether the eye really does notice if the product comes from New Zealand or from wherever, and whether that has any effect. So tell us, does it?
Yeah, thanks, John and Sarah, for the introductions there. So, within the Retail and Consumer Insight team, we regularly are looking at shopping behaviour. We do this both with online surveys with consumers, but also looking at the in-store behaviours. And I think before I get to the New Zealand stuff, I'll just kind of like give you that kind of wider context around meat shopping journeys and certainly for dairy products as well, is that people judge things with their eyes when they're in store. There's lots of messaging that can come across to people. So certainly on the research that we've done around meat, we know that taste, appearance and the functional benefits of what that product is going to do and feature, for them in their household decisions is critical. But what we wanted to do beyond our kind of regular research was kind of working to get underneath the skin a little bit. And we did this by commissioning a piece of consumer research with YouGov. And we looked at identifying UK's kind of willingness to buy imported food from New Zealand. Now, you kind of said earlier on, you know, nothing new. Well, actually, yeah, the consumers have been familiar with New Zealand product for a long period of time. And what we did is we asked them survey questions, which went underneath the skin a little bit more depth. And it really kind of helped us uncover the kind of split nature, really, of purchase decisions based on just country of origin. So we asked consumers, for instance, that if meat was sold and labelled in supermarkets or in restaurants from New Zealand, but cost the same as the British product, 42% of Brits said they would likely purchase it, and a similar proportion, 40%, saying it was not likely. So you can see there, we've kind of got a bit of a split audience. Now, we also know that sort of all things aren't equal all the time, and price is becoming really paramount with consumers, which I'll kind of come on to a little bit as well. The research also uncovered a little bit more depth around when we went into beef and lamb in particular. There was a strong sentiment around purchasing British beef, which was 82%, and British lamb at 70%, if they were priced the same in store. So there is the kind of the sentiment and the willingness from consumers to buy British. But what we thought was also interesting is when we asked follow-on questions about how they could assess that product, it kind of also uncovered something more for us. We did this by asking their impressions of meat and dairy from New Zealand and Britain. And we asked it across different range of elements, around welfare, food safety, the impact on the environment and quality. And what we interestingly found was that actually it kind of ranged between 40 and 50% sat in that don't know category. Now, when you do consumer research, usually you kind of like you want people to make a decision you want. But also there can also be something really insightful about when you find such a large proportion sitting, I say on the fence a little bit, but kind of in that kind of indifferent, really. They don't really know much about it to make those kind of firm decisions. So there's certainly familiarity with New Zealand product, but there's also probably from consumers probably a limited knowledge base of which to make really strong informed decisions. So they're kind of doing that from assessing, you know, what they're seeing as well, but also they're doing it through being familiar with the product.
So just to interrupt you there, just for a second then. So you've got that sort of 50% that are in no man's land. And I mean, I guess that there's a school of thought which says that, you know, well, that's quite helpful because, you know, whatever then the marketing does, it nudges them into making a positive decision. But presumably the flip side to that coin is that if that nudge isn't there, there's a risk that the shopper will make a decision to opt not to buy a British product or to buy the product from New Zealand. So that sort of no man's land is fertile ground, I guess, for the marketeers.
Yeah, it kind of like points to, you know, going beyond just an origin stamp and needing to actively communicate whether you're a British producer or if you were, you know, a New Zealand listener to this. You'd sort of like would be kind of coming into it from a point of view of saying, well, you need to communicate, you know, what the product attributes are, what are the quality credentials of your product, how was it produced? What are the benefits to the consumer? But also fundamentally, obviously, with the work that we do with retailers and processors, we know that there's that continuous cycle of trying to make sure people are familiar with the product, what they're going to do with the product. And if you take the example of lamb, for instance, we know that it is a high priced protein compared to some of the others. So for some consumers, certainly in a situation where there's a lot of price sensitivity, we need to provide consumers with confidence around the product they're buying and how they're going to use it, and also make sure that it's fitting with the meals that they're buying at the time.
Okay, so you listed a series of things then that are important to the shopper, and one of those, of course, was price. So what more can you tell me around price?
Well, I think certainly from a price perspective, we are seeing that kind of wider consumer landscape. Obviously, the survey questions that we did about British and New Zealand did isolate price being the same, but we do know that that's not the case, sort of in the sense that consumers are being sort of constantly challenged at the moment around the cost of living and inflation. And we're seeing that spike through in our survey results and certainly research that we're seeing come through. So for instance, you know, we've had research coming from IGD, which has highlighted that 60% of all consumer groups are looking to cut down out of home spend. We've seen the rates of which people are trying to stick to a budget grow from sort of March 2021. It was at 34%. That's gone up to 42% in March 22. And we know that sort of a large proportion. So the latest survey results by IGD in April highlighted that 72% have noticed food and grocery prices changing. So I think sort of being very mindful with consumers that they are going to be sort of having to evaluate on price as well to a certain degree, and making some quite critical decisions, which makes it even more important really to make sure that we're communicating those kind of quality attributes, how it's produced, really to kind of make sure the consumer is aware of, you know, where their money's being spent and that what's gone into that product to get it to the supermarket shelves.
You talked about people sort of making buying decisions sort of, you know, based on what they see. So, you know, it's a little bit like chefs will tell you that people eat with their eyes. You know, that's why it's presented in a way on the plate. So packaging, the way it's displayed in a on a supermarket shelf or in a retail setting. So packaging is important, and I'm minded to sort of think about assurance schemes and that sort of thing as well. So is the fact that there's a red tractor logo on there, is that the sort of thing that influences decisions as well, Steve?
Yeah, well, it could be a whole new podcast here, John. Like, and we have done lots of research around these kind of areas. There's actually a Reinventing Retail project that the team have been working on, and that report is available on the Retail and Consumer Insight webpages. And that looked at actually sort of all the main kind of criteria that you make that decision process. So you're right in around assurance schemes, but you have to also remember that it goes in the backdrop of lots of other communication and mechanisms around health, the environment, farmers. So it's, unfortunately, it's not just one thing we have to pull on. We're getting quite demanding as a consumer, and we have to meet those changing consumer needs. So and essentially we have to hit multiple points. And so we have seen the retail environment, certainly for meat, that we've gone into a lot of depth, like trying to evolve. It's got, you know, progress to make. And I think sort of like we are working with the supply chain around how we can enhance that. And that report's online, and we've got a further one coming out in September, actually, around sort of reinventing the online environment. So when you're not sort of like looking just at the physical one, you've got that kind of online environment, which can, and by itself, open out a whole new ball game, because that can actually provide great opportunity for people to go out and find a little bit more about products as well that you might not be able to do in a physical store. So in some way, that can also provide a great opportunity if you're looking to talk about assurance, give people a lot more detail about what's gone behind the scenes that you know, not always physically could do in an in-store environment. You can imagine a shopper having to go around and buy across 20 or 30 different categories. You know, we'd love to say on this podcast that they're going to spend an eternity really assessing and scrutinizing a British and New Zealand meat product. But, you know, the reality as well is that they also have got, you know, 50 or 60 other items that they've got to go and search. And from a consumer perspective, they're also evaluating that kind of the corporate social responsibility of the retailer, the packaging, the innovation, the kind of environmental carbon footprint of their own purchase habits, their family habits, and the cost of living crisis. And you can see there how it slowly unravels to kind of say, well, actually, they're single markers on that kind of wider consumer circle, really.
This is just a fascinating area, and thank you very much for the insight that you give us into sort of consumer and shopper behaviour. Thank you very much indeed, Steve. Steve, I'll leave you there, and I'll go back to Sarah, if I may. So, Sarah, this report that we're talking about in this podcast is one in a series of two, isn't it? What does the second one cover?
So, John, our next podcast, which is coming up very soon, is really going to get under the skin. It's getting the economists out, and it's getting the numbers out, and it's getting under the skin of what the impact of this trade deal will be for UK agriculture. So we've liaised with some colleagues at Harper Adams University, and we've used a network modelling approach to really look at the relationships between the existing trading partners, the introduction of a new FTA, free trade agreement, and how that will affect the balance of trade between that network. So the important thing is we'll show what happens with the impact of this trade agreement with all other things being equal. But also in these times of geopolitical unrest, we're going to look at the what if scenarios. So what if China and New Zealand trade relations deteriorated to a point that China may impose tariffs on New Zealand produce coming across to them, or indeed an embargo. Where would that product be diverted to, and what would be the effect on prices, and in particular the effect on UK markets? So that ability to look at the trade deal in its entirety and look at the immediate impact with all other things remaining equal, and then run some important what-if scenarios, is going to help inform the consequences and the potential consequences longer term of this new free trade agreement.
So Sarah, really looking forward to that. I have to say that you economists, you've probably got a bit of a hill to climb to go up against the strong performance by Steve Evans on Consumer Insight there. So I've set the challenge.
And the and your superb chairmanship. I mean, John Bates, what an anchor.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you very much indeed to my guests, Sarah Baker and Steve Evans. If you've got any comments about this podcast or ideas for future episodes, you can email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk. AHDB really does want to hear from you. So as I say, thank you very much indeed again to my guests, Sarah Baker and Steve Evans. This podcast was produced by Sarah Meesom. Stay safe, stay well. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening.